We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Navy engineer Ed Cameron and his brother Duncan waited nervously. They hoped this time would be better than the last. A lot of good men died that day, and they did not die well. This new technology could turn the tide of World War II. Sacrifices had to be made. Ed hoped those sacrifices wouldn't be in vain. Just when they thought the experiment was working, all hell broke loose. They ran from the engine room to the deck. Like before, a swirling green vortex of light surrounded the ship. They kept running and gave each other a knowing look as they reached the end of the deck and jumped. Just as they were about to hit the water, Albelek opened his eyes. It was the most vivid dream he'd ever had. It felt like a memory. That June morning in 1977 was the day Albelek became obsessed with the Philadelphia experiment. As World War II loomed, the United States found itself unprepared. America wasn't a superpower then. Its military was only the 10th largest in the world, half the size of England's. The U.S. military needed an edge. Building an army would take years, so that edge would have to come from technology. During World War I, Nikola Tesla worked with the United States Army on remote control technology and ways to detect submarines. Tesla said he created a particle beam weapon nicknamed Tesla's Death Ray, though there's no evidence that it worked.
Is there?
Okay, there might be evidence it worked. A little too well.
Tesla's Death Ray link down below, yo.
The war began in 1939. Germany seemed invincible. By 1942, Nazi forces occupied almost all of Europe, North Africa, and huge parts of Russia. The U.S., now part of the Allies, appeared to be on the losing side. Desperate for an advantage, the U.S. military once again looked to science. Tesla had ideas for electromagnetic weapons, including one for invisibility. In 1919, Albert Einstein proved light could be bent by gravity. Out of desperation, the United States launched Project Rainbow. Building on the theories of Tesla and Einstein, scientists designed a device that could make ships invisible to radar and invisible to the naked eye. The goal was ambitious: create a powerful electromagnetic field to warp space-time around the ship. A prototype was installed on the USS Eldridge. In July 1943, they were ready for the first test. Dr. John von Neumann, a scientist working with the Navy, would lead the project. To operate the equipment, von Neumann chose two Navy engineers, brothers Edward and Duncan Cameron. They manned their stations in the engine room, and when the call came in, they switched on the machine. Within a few seconds, the ship resonated with a deep humming sound. Then a glowing green fog appeared. People watching from the dock and nearby ships couldn't believe it. The Eldridge was gone. That is, until it mysteriously turned up in Norfolk, Virginia, over 200 miles away. But the strangest part? It was seen there 10 minutes before the equipment was turned on.
Wait. So it was invisible or it time-traveled?
Both. 20 minutes later, the Eldridge reappeared in Philadelphia. But something had gone terribly wrong. When the Eldridge reappeared in Philadelphia, sailors on other ships cheered. They thought the experiment was a success. It wasn't. For the men aboard, it was a nightmare. Men were found fused to parts of the ship, screaming in agony. Ed and Duncan Cameron survived the experiment, but other survivors weren't so lucky. Some had severe burns and radiation sickness. Some went insane. Some men simply vanished. Despite the disaster, the U.S. Navy saw potential. They brought in their top scientific consultant, Albert Einstein, for advice.
Yeah, if you're gonna phone a friend, he's a good one to have on speed dial.
He sure is.
So you're going with the laws of physics are the same for all non-accelerating observers, and that the speed of light in a vacuum is constant, regardless of the observer's motion. Is that your final answer?
On October 28, 1943, after repairs and upgrades, it was time for another Philadelphia experiment. Ed and Duncan Cameron took their posts. The call came in from the bridge. It was time to go. Ed turned on the machine, which spun to life with the familiar low humming sound. The Cameron brothers waited nervously. A few seconds later, there was an explosion. The machine was shaking itself loose, and fires were breaking out everywhere. Ed and Duncan raced topside and saw the same bright green vortex surrounding the ship. They jumped over the railing, expecting to land in the water in the Philadelphia shipyard. Instead, they fell through the bright green light and hit dry land. They were still covered in light, but now the light was coming from a helicopter and the headlights of a Jeep. Two military policemen yanked Ed and Duncan to their feet and drove them to a building nearby. They were escorted down a long hallway and placed into an elevator. An MP hit a button, the door closed, and they felt themselves going down, a long way down. When the elevator doors opened, they saw a familiar face, Dr. John von Neumann, the physicist in charge of the experiment. But von Neumann looked old, very old. Von Neumann said, "Welcome to 1983, boys." The Cameron brothers looked at each other confused. Did he say 1983? That's not right. The year was 1943. Then von Neumann said, "Come with me. A lot has happened in the last 40 years. Ed and Duncan thought they were jumping to safety when they jumped overboard. They had no idea they'd be jumping through time. Ed and Duncan Cameron found themselves in an underground facility beneath Montauk Air Force Station on Long Island. Officially, it was a decommissioned radar station. Unofficially, it was the headquarters of the Montauk Project, a continuation and escalation of the Philadelphia experiment. And like the Philadelphia experiment, the Montauk Project could manipulate the fabric of time and space. But now the manipulation could be controlled.
Controlled by what?
Psychics and alien technology.
Ah! This story feels like Christmas morning. Please continue.
Central to the experiments was the Montauk chair. The chair used computers to generate electromagnetic fields that interacted with human brainwaves. Nikola Tesla's theories on resonance and energy played a role in the chair's design. The technology that connected the human mind to the machine was reverse-engineered from UFOs. Many recovered UFOs had no physical controls. They were operated by the mind of the pilot. The Montauk chair amplified psychic abilities, allowing subjects to manifest objects, see distant locations, and travel through time.
Oy, I hope it had good lumbar support. Time travel is murder on your lower back. Murder.
Both Ed and Duncan used the chair effectively, but Duncan was naturally talented. His abilities made him the focal point of the tests. During one intense session, Duncan's eyes rolled back, his voice became unnaturally deep, and he said he could see other worlds and parallel dimensions. He said the multiverse is real. Edward wasn't as proficient, but he could still travel through time. On one occasion, Ed and Duncan traveled together to the year 2137. And they did not like what they found.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
By 1987, Duncan had mastered the Montauk chair. He could visit any time or place and bring Ed with him. The brothers sat in their chairs. Duncan focused on sending them 150 years into the future, to 2137. There was a flash of light, and suddenly they were in a wasteland. In the distance, they saw cities and ruins. They walked past the occasional outpost, but most locals didn't want anything to do with them. But some were willing to talk.
Sometime in the late 2020s, a nuclear war broke out between the West, Russia, and China. Every big city on Earth was destroyed, and most small cities too. Governments were gone. People became tribal again. The war caused a climate catastrophe that put the coastlines underwater. Only about 100 million people survived.
Despite this disaster, people still expressed hope for the future.
There aren't many of us left, but we're still moving technology forward. Not as fast as we'd like, but we're resilient. We still innovate. Everyone is building weapons, of course, but we've also been able to cure most diseases. And we think we've discovered a way to heal the planet. It's just a matter of time. It's a matter of time.
Just a matter of time, she said. Duncan and Ed decided to test this theory. They went into the future 300 more years, to 2749. This place was very different. Ed and Duncan described it as a utopia. Society had rebuilt itself in harmony with technology and nature. Buildings floated using anti-gravity. Energy was clean and limitless, pulled from the quantum vacuum. Pollution didn't exist.
How dare you!
Oh, and governments didn't exist.
Oh, I like the sound of that. But if there's no government, who's running things?
Artificial intelligence.
They put AI in charge of the whole world? Oh, you humans. This won't end well.
People lived in peace and wanted for nothing. Money was no longer necessary. Technology provided food, education, entertainment, and anything else they needed. Education and personal development were prioritized. People spent their lives learning and exploring their interests, free from the burdens of labor and survival. This was a world where humanity had not just survived, but thrived. This future was paradise. The thought of returning to Montauk's cold underground rooms was depressing. This place was blissful. Ed and Duncan could finally be free of the infamous Montauk Project and the Montauk Chair. So, defying their orders, they decided to stay. Ed opened his eyes and checked his watch. Though he and Duncan lived in the future for 2 years, no time had passed. This was a superpower. They could travel anywhere in time and the world. And then Ed heard Duncan's voice in his mind. Not just anywhere in the world. We can travel to any world in the galaxy.
Wait, what?
A flash of light transported them to another planet. It was stark and desolate, bathed in perpetual twilight. The sky was an eerie shade of purple. The air was thin and tasted metallic. Jagged mountains and barren plains stretched to the horizon.
If you could go anywhere in the galaxy, why would you go there? I mean, I would go to Ryza, or at least some place with room service and a decent lobby bar.
Ed was also curious why Duncan brought them to such a harsh place. Duncan said this planet is home to the most advanced civilization in the galaxy. Duncan described the inhabitants as tall, slender beings with long limbs and large, almond-shaped eyes. They communicated telepathically. They mastered teleportation. They could manipulate matter at the molecular level. They were nearly immortal. Ed was about to ask a question, But then Duncan closed his eyes, and once again, there was a flash of light. Then they were in a lush jungle, and judging by the sound, this planet was teeming with life. And Duncan said it was, then transmitted an image into Ed's mind, a huge city built into the jungle landscape. Ed asked who lived there. Duncan motioned to the jungle behind him and said, "They do." Ed turned and saw two reptilian creatures watching them from the jungle.
"Listen, people."
"Yep."
"Does this kid have a death wish? If there's only one rule in interdimensional space travel, it's do not go to the lizard people planet."
Ed got the same impression. He said the creatures didn't look friendly, and Duncan said, "They're not. We should get out of here." Then he fell to his knees like he was kicked in the gut. Ed helped him up and asked if he was all right. Duncan said, "No, Ed, I'm not. We need to get back to Montauk. There's something I have to tell you." Ed Cameron opened his eyes, disconnected from his chair, and bolted down the hall. He burst into his brother Duncan's room. Duncan looked terrible. He was panting, sweating, and his skin was pale. Dr. von Neumann walked in next.
"Ed, I'm sorry. Your brother is dying. Every time he jumps, he gets worse. Every jump spins off a new timeline. He's created paradoxes we didn't foresee, and he's damaged the fabric of space-time itself."
Ed asked if there was anything that could be done.
"This all started in Philadelphia back in 43. We need to stop that experiment from ever happening. So, as soon as Duncan is strong enough, you two will make one last jump. You'll go to the Eldridge and destroy the equipment. That should repair our timeline."
Ed agreed to go, but what happens after that?
"When you return from the Eldridge, Duncan will... I have to be honest with you, Ed. It's dangerous. Duncan will project his consciousness and yours into the brains of infants in the late 1920s, before the experiment was conceived. Your host is named Al Bielik."
Ed was confused. He was born in 1916. Would he coexist with this other person?
"All your memories will be suppressed. Al Bielik won't know that your consciousness is there. We need to keep your and Duncan's knowledge hidden. The other Ed and Duncan Cameron will never be a part of the experiment. But if we need you, this version of you, in the future, we'll know where to find you."
Now Ed understood what had to be done.
"Yeah, at least somebody understands. This story sounds like it was written by Christopher Nolan on magic mushrooms."
The consciousness transfer was a security measure. Ed and Duncan had a lot of valuable knowledge. If the Philadelphia experiment never happens, then the Montauk Project never happens. And maybe that's a good thing, but it makes sense to keep their knowledge safe, just in case. Ed felt a sudden shiver and asked von Neumann a question. He was pretty sure he already knew the answer. He asked what happens to them here in Montauk after the consciousness transfer.
"Once we're sure that both your consciousnesses have been transferred safely, I will tell Duncan a phrase. The time is now." It's a subliminal message. "The time is now." As soon as he hears the phrase, he will summon a monster from another dimension. That monster will destroy our equipment, our files, everything. And when that's done, it will kill us all.
Throughout the 1970s and 80s, Al Bielik worked as an electrical engineer, and his co-workers described him as thoughtful and intelligent. But he also had a fascination with fringe science. In 1985, Al went to Montauk, New York, to hear Preston Nichols give a presentation about how he used electromagnetic waves for various applications, from healing to amplifying psychic power. Al wanted to learn more about his psychic research. Nichols walked on stage with his assistant, who he introduced to the audience. His name was Duncan Cameron. Though he'd never seen Duncan before, Al swore he knew him. After the presentation, Al introduced himself.
"And we talked for about 2.5 hours. And about halfway through this, I got this strange feeling in the pit of my stomach. I knew this guy from someplace. So finally I asked him, I said, Doctor, do you have any feeling, any idea that possibly you know me from somewhere? He said, yes. I said, I do. I said, from where? He says, I have no idea. And I said, I got the same feeling. I also have no idea where it's from.
Preston smiled and said he wanted to show them something. A few miles east was an abandoned military base, the old Montauk Air Force Station. Preston said they might find answers there. They explored the empty buildings all day, and Al had an eerie sense that he'd been there before.
We felt something. We didn't like it. We went driving, finally parked the van at the park, and we went wandering on the grounds, wide open. Fences were down. Further into the grounds we went, the more ugly we felt about what we were feeling. We were not nauseous, but we were very highly disturbed by the fields around that property in broad daylight.
Over the next couple of years, Al's memories of the Montauk Project returned. Preston Nichols told Al he was brainwashed. Preston said the same thing happened to him. Preston Nichols lived two lives simultaneously. In one, he was an electrical engineer. In the other, he was the director of the Montauk Project.
Links to Deep Dive on the Montauk Project and Preston Nichols down there with all the other words.
Al Bielek was brainwashed the same way. And now that his memories were returning, his recurring dreams started to make sense. In the dream, Al's name was Edward Cameron. He worked with his brother Duncan on a ship. There was an accident. They jumped overboard and then Al woke up. Then in 1988, everything fell into place. Al, now retired, was watching TV late one night.
At 4 a.m. in the morning, HBO announced that the next feature of the evening would be the Philadelphia Experiment.
It started to trigger memories. First of the Phoenix Project, then in 88, when I, for the first time, saw the movie, it hit me like a bomb, and I started to remember the Philadelphia Experiment.
Because of the movie, Al's repressed memories of the Philadelphia Experiment came flooding back in.
If you've ever seen the movie, The Philadelphia Experiment, they show the opening scene taking place in a bar in downtown Philadelphia. That did actually occur. The name of that bar was the Blue Lagoon. I was there quite a bit. In the movie, they show two principals running the equipment who are having their last night out. The taller one, played by, I think it was Robert Perret, was my brother. The other one, who was shorter, and they didn't have a role model, and who had the girlfriend, was me.
Over the next 2 years, Al Bielek recalled all of Edward Cameron's memories and the truth. And the truth was ugly. The Montauk Project was a black ops government program to create psychological weapons. Thousands of people were used in experiments against their will. Most were boys between 10 and 15 years old. Some of these children remember the experiments. They're known as the Montauk Boys.
They wanted a large number of programmed boys to be used for mind control operations.
The Montauk Boys program, basically, what they were doing, they would pick up boys, young men, off the street.
So they started picking these kids up because they were quite literally homeless. When they were done programming them, they returned them back to where they had come from, waiting to be used.
There was a psychic by the name of Duncan Cameron, who was one of the ones used, and many of us boys who were in our early teens at the time were used energetically to boost him while he was in the chair.
In 1990, Al Bielek started giving lectures nationwide. He wanted to expose the government cover-up of the Montauk Project. He wanted the public to know about the human rights violations, missing children, about the abuse.
I went to Jack Pruitt, the station master, and said, look, we've got to change this program. They're beating up these kids to death, and they're being treated very badly. They refuse to become part of it.
Al Bielek and Preston Nichols said the Montauk Project focused on mind control, time travel, interdimensional travel, and psychics. The U.S. government denies these claims as ridiculous. But are they? Did the U.S. government research time travel and interdimensional travel? Yes, that was the Gateway process. Did the U.S. government use psychics for military and espionage? Yes, that was Project Stargate. And the big one, did the U.S. government conduct mind control experiments on people against their will? Yes, that was the MKUltra program.
Many unwitting men, including themselves, all with the use of Ayatollah Khamenei. I was only 9 years old when this sexual humiliation began. I was in what looked like a laboratory, and there seemed to be other children. I was strapped down, naked, spread eagle, on a table, on my back. Dr. Green had electrodes on my body, including my head. I was exploited unwittingly for nearly 3 decades of my life, and the only explanations given to me were that, quote, the end justifies the means, and, quote, I was serving my country in their bold effort to fight communism.
Yeah, we got links to all that stuff down there, too, down in the place.
There's no hard evidence that the Montauk Project happened, but does it really matter? The evil acts allegedly committed during the Montauk Project did happen at one time or another. I bet there are evil acts being committed against our citizens right now. So I'll make this promise to the scientists and researchers working in secret government programs. I'll stop reporting the crimes you commit against your own people when you stop committing them. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. I've covered the Philadelphia Experiment and the Montauk Project before. Today's story is Al Bielek's. Al came forward in 1989 and quickly became a star in the UFO / conspiracy community. He's been on over 40 radio shows, including Coast to Coast. He's headlined over 40 conferences. It's easy to see why. He has a great story, and Al tells it well. But is it true? Well, that's tricky. We're not asking if the Philadelphia Experiment or Montauk Project happened. We're asking if Al Bielek's story is true. Al said he was born in New York in 1927. That's true. But he also said he was age-regressed. In the future, he was sent back in time to when he was a fetus. Edward Cameron's consciousness was sent back with him. Al said he served in the Navy, but there's no record of this. No record of Edward or Duncan Cameron serving on the Eldridge or any Navy ship. On the day of the Philadelphia Experiment, the Eldridge was in New York. Al says all records of the experiment were erased by the government. The Philadelphia Experiment conspiracy theory really starts with two men, a UFO fan named Carl Allen and a UFO writer named Morris Jessup.
There's a link down there for that, too. We got links for these. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Get your links right here.
The time travel storyline wasn't part of the Philadelphia Experiment legend until the movie was released. Al's story contains a lot of details from the movie. And Al's story has changed over time. Originally, he jumped from 1943 to 1983. But over the years, he added 2137, 2043, 2749, 3543, and all kinds of other dates. Sometimes Duncan stays behind in a certain time. Sometimes Al stays behind and works as a tour guide in the future with anti-gravity and floating cities.
A tour guide on an anti-gravity city? Okay, folks, please follow me and stay with your group. We're floating. Okay, stop. And we're floating. No flash photography, please. And we're floating.
Al's story is flexible. When challenged, he said he's discovering new memories repressed from brainwashing. The Edward Cameron backstory evolved too, but Ed Cameron never existed. On Al's website was a picture of Edward Cameron, except it wasn't. It was really a Princeton yearbook photo of A. Cameron, Alexander Cameron III, class of 36. Al says the picture is Edward Cameron from a different timeline. Al's used other photos that were proven to be fake. Al said John von Neumann ran the project. Von Neumann was a real scientist, but he died in 1957. How could he be in Montauk in 1983? Al said he faked his death for protection.
Dr. von Neumann is still alive today. Official records say that he died sometime in 57 of cancer.
Yep.
They gave him a new identity, but he remained on the project, and he was a director of the Phoenix Project until 77. Whereupon he became a consultant because he developed a split personality. Today he is the split personality, if you will.
Al also said the Office of Naval Research was involved in the Philadelphia experiment. The experiment happened in 1943. The ONR was informed until 1946. There's plenty of evidence Al Bielek made the whole thing up. But when backed into a corner, he used the different timeline trope as a crutch.
Now that crutch worked well in Marvel movies.
But did it, though?
No, it did not.
Al said nuclear war happens in 2000. When that didn't happen, he said 2005, then 2015. Al Bielek passed away in 2011, so we don't have an update on when the nuclear war actually starts. While Al Bielek was gaining fame telling his story, other people were popping up saying the same thing happened to them, but they'd add new details. Al would then incorporate those details into his own story. That's how the Montauk Project eventually became part of Al's story. Now, I won't go into the Montauk Project connection here. I cover that in another episode where I have a lot to say about Preston Nichols. Things that aren't widely reported. Things that you won't like. I talk about Al Bielek in that episode too, but it's a different version of his story. Today's was his original version with some new details like traveling to other planets. I included that chapter because it was fun.
And there was a chance for me to say lizard people. The people love it when I say that.
They do.
How did you know you could buy your very own Lizard People mug from the Y-Files store? Just go
no,
to...
No. No merch plugs. We do those at the end. Al Bielek never provided physical evidence or any information that could be confirmed. We do know that he was always a little paranoid and into conspiracies. A former co-worker of Al's was asked if he believed the story. He said Al was a nice guy and intelligent, but he wasn't surprised to hear the story.
I find his story pretty hard to believe. But it sure seems like a logical progression for Al from what I recall. He was always talking about underground bases and government cover-ups. He had one story after another about secret research, UFOs, extraterrestrials, you name it.
Another former co-worker also confirmed Al was into all this stuff, but it didn't bother him.
Hey, if I could get people to pay to hear my once-upon-a-time bullshit stories, I'd do it too. More power to them. Caveat emptor. Everyone has to exercise his or her own wisdom in deciding if someone is the real thing or not.
And that's the main theme of the Y-Files. I try to give you as much information as I can. It's really up to you to decide what you believe. Now, true or not, these stories spark our imagination. They keep us interested in concepts like time travel, psychic phenomena, alternate realities, and other mysteries of the universe. We'll only unlock these mysteries if we stay fascinated by the possibilities of not what is, but what could be. Also, these stories remind us to keep an eye on the government. Secret government research is real. We only know this because of whistleblowers from Al Bielek to Bob Lazar to Phil Schneider to David Grush and many more. But don't blindly accept their claims as true, and don't instantly assume their claims are false. Demand proof. You believe them? Good. Investigate and prove it. You think they're lying? Good. Investigate and prove it. We only know about MKUltra, Stargate, Project Blue Book, and all the others because whistleblowers came forward. They made unbelievable claims that most people dismissed. But some people believed the stories. They investigated and found proof that the claims were true. On one side are true believers. On the other, die-hard skeptics. Both sides constantly try to prove the other wrong. Good. Keep investigating. Both sides want the same thing. What we all want. What we all deserve. We deserve the truth. Thank you so much for hanging out today. My name is AJ. There's Hecklefish.
Where's the beef?
This has been The Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do him a favor, subscribe, comment, like, share. All those buttons, click those. That really makes him happy. And like most topics we cover, today's was recommended by you. Now, if you have a story idea or something you'd like us to explore, head over to thewyfiles.com/tips. Don't forget, The Y-Files is also a podcast. Twice a week, I release deep dives on the stories we cover here, plus exclusive episodes that don't make it to the channel. You can find the Y-Files Operation Podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Now, if you need more Y-Files in your life, check out our Discord. There are thousands of people on there 24/7, and they're into the same weird stuff that we are. It's a great community, it's really supportive, it's a lot of fun, and it's free to join. Now, stay up to date with all things Y-Files by checking out our production calendar at thewyfiles.com/cal. There you'll find our episode schedule, upcoming podcasts, live streams, all kinds of stuff. And special thanks to our patrons who make this channel possible. Every episode of The Y-Files is dedicated to our Patreon members. I couldn't do this without you. And the community that we've created around the channel is something very, very special. And it's all thanks to our members. If you'd like to support the channel and join an amazing community, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to perks like videos early with no commercials, a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff, access to merch only available to members, plus you get 2 private live streams every week just for you. The whole White Files team is on the stream, and you can jump up on stage and talk directly with me and anybody. Ask a question, suggest a topic, or just say hi. Or just lurk in the crowd and listen. People do that, and that's fine too. Another great way to support the channel is grab something from the White Files store.
Grab a heck of a t-shirt, or one of these heckle mugs that you stick your fist in, or a delicious beverage, or both that they could fit. As long as you're enjoying yourself, I'm not here to judge you. Or grab something with my face on it, or one of these squeezy, talking animal fish style toy dolls that talk like me.
Those are the plugs, and that's going to do it. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
In Area 51, a secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. Get it, I got stuck inside Mel's home with MK Ultra. I've been only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set, or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told, and his name was Cold. And I can't believe secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Serpo 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. In a simulation, don't you worry though, the Black Knight satellite, it told me so. I can't believe I'm dancing with the fish. Head for fish on Thursday nights with AJ2 and the
camels love to-